But 43 days, by the way, from the start of the college football season. This year, August 24th, wow. You got a big game with the Florida Gators taking on the Hurricanes of Miami, and then everybody gets underway the next weekend as far as the Labor Day weekend. So, and here's the thing. I was talking about this earlier on the this week on the show, that it's, you know, when we think about the Tennessee Vols or Vanderbilt and the Tennessee Titans, it's rare that in one year all three teams can live up to the expectations that the fans have for these respective teams. And I bring it up because I think that we could certainly be looking at that this year, because in breaking down Vanderbilt's schedule and the Tennessee Vols, for example, I have both of these teams at 7-4 going into that final week of the year and that game being played over at Neyland Stadium this year. For Vanderbilt, I use it as a little asterisk here. I hope they learn from the past, meaning that, you know, if they do get off to a sluggish start, you know, say 1-2 in those first three games, knowing that they have Georgia the opening week, then they have to go to Purdue, and then after the bye week, they have to host LSU. So probably we're talking about 0-2 start in the conference. But, you know, when I'm looking down the schedule and I see what starts up right after that, Northern Illinois, Ole Miss, UNLV, Missouri, at South Carolina, I see five winnable games. I see 4-1. So to say that there could be 7-4 for Vanderbilt, for example, going into their final game, that's without upsetting anybody.
Boy, that's that would be awfully fun if both those teams were 7-4. Yeah, I mean, I mean, frankly, you know, Purdue's got some players to replace, including a quarterback, but I think 0-3 is going to be tough to avoid for Vanderbilt. I think if they do end up getting a win out of those first three, I mean, it's probably that one, but you know, that would definitely set them up for some things. You're right, the schedule gets a lot softer. It's so hard for me with Vanderbilt to, you know, to know what to expect. Not just because quarterback, but because, you know, I think that you know, if Riley Neal does indeed win the job, I mean, I think there's a lot of promise there. And obviously, their three stars on offense are fantastic, but I just don't know what to think about, you know, their defense, which was not good at all last year and lost a lot of veterans. You know, now maybe there are some young players, you know, ready to come in and you know, step up and they'll surprise. But at this point, I can't look at that defense is anything but a liability. So I think if they are going to have that kind of success you're talking about, it's probably going to be in a lot of really high scoring games, which certainly is possible.
I mean, here's the thing. The defense wasn't great last year. We're not talking about a defense that we saw, say, two seasons or three seasons ago, for example. But here's the thing. Can this year's defense at least be equal to last year's defense? Yeah, and that's not saying a lot. It's not like they have to be great to live up to that, per se. I bring it up because offensively, last year, the Vanderbilt Commodores scored 28 or more points in eight games. They were 6-2 in those games. And when you talk about, I mean, look at the three representatives from Vanderbilt showing up on Thursday representing the school on SEC Media Days. Kalijah Lipscomb led the conference last year in receptions. Jared Pinkney, the tight end, led all tight ends in the SEC with receptions. Keyshawn Vaughn led all running backs in the SEC with yards per carry, ending up with over 1,200 rushing yards. You know, it's strong. When I look at that group of three, it's a very impressive group that comes to the table. And look, can a Vanderbilt team this year average 28 or more points? They're very capable. Offense was not an issue. And, yes, I understand they lose Kyle Shurmur, but they've got a lot of weapons. It certainly makes that job a lot easier when you've got those kind of guys to depend on.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, I still can't believe Pinckney's playing on Saturdays instead of Sundays this fall. That's just, you know, it's great for Vanderbilt. And I think he will play on Sundays. And, you know, Lipscomb would be the one guy that I felt pretty strongly would be back. But Vaughn, too, after the performance, you know, in Houston, the bowl game, you know, I thought, and, you know, if you really look at his season, he really wasn't used as much as he should have been used early. And he did get nicked up a few times, too, and missed some time because of that. I mean, at the end there, it was like, my goodness, this guy is a threat. So, I agree. Those three guys, it will be a lot of fun to watch them, and maybe that will make the difference, and they can win a lot of games like that. I mean, the new quarterback you know, Kyle Shurmur is a big loss, and he was a very good quarterback, and I think he will be employed in the NFL for a long time. But, you know, if it's Riley Neal, if it's Deuce Wallace, a lot of this is just get the ball out, get it to your people, and let them go. You know, I mean, just distribute the ball and let these guys go to work. And, you know, Kalijah Lipscomb, too, I mean, there are some other really good, you know, receivers around him. C.J. Bowler had a really nice freshman year. You know, Cameron Johnson was on his way, and then, of course, had a season-ending injury last year. I mean, that could be one of the best receiving groups, not just Lipscomb, in the SEC.
Looking at the other side of that, to our friends to the east, as far as the Tennessee Vols are concerned, I mentioned that I feel like they get off to the 7-4 start. I think they end the losing streak to Vanderbilt this year. You know, a lot of things can happen, obviously, between now and November 30th. But I think they get to that eighth win. So when we talk about fans' expectation, yeah, for Vanderbilt, it'd be disappointing if they couldn't extend the winning streak. But at the same time, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, are you going to be happy with a 7-5 record with then, you know, being bowl eligible and a chance to get your eighth win in a bowl game? Absolutely. Disappointed for probably the weekend if you lose to Tennessee, but... And if you're the Vols, if I tell you right now you're 8-4 in the regular season this year, including stopping that losing streak to Vanderbilt, are you not going to be happy in year two of Jeremy Pruitt's era there with the Vols?
Oh, yeah. If the Vols go 8-4 and beat Vanderbilt, I mean, I think you're ecstatic as a Vols fan. You know, provided you're a realistic fan, I mean, that would be a really, really nice step forward in year two for Pruitt. But, you know, you say with Vanderbilt, I mean, hey, all I know, Johnny, all I know living in this state is Vanderbilt blowouts over Tennessee. So, I mean, 3-3. And, I mean, of all the things I've seen, you know, if someone told me that 3 years ago, I would have laughed. Like, there's just no way. So, those games have really meant a lot to Derek Mason in particular, you know, in terms of his tenure. But with Tennessee, I mean, I like a lot of what they have. I mean, I think they have a lot more known commodities, you know, in their back seven on defense. I think they have good receivers. I like Garantano. I don't know if I love him. I don't know if he's great, but I think he's pretty good. And I really like his toughness and his approach. And I feel like if he can just get a little bit more help, especially help, you know, staying upright. He could have a really good year. Ty Chandler, you know, it's the trenches. It's the trenches on both sides of the football. And obviously in this league, so critical. And, yeah, you can stretch that to Vanderbilt, too. Offensive line loses three guys. Defensive front, I don't know. And with Tennessee, they lose a lot up front on defense. And, of course, they've had such terrible luck with the injuries on offense. And so many retirements and people shuffling around. You know, if they can be okay on both sides of the ball up front, then I think they have a lot around that can really make this a pretty sizable step forward for Pruitt's second year.
Joe Rexrode with the Tennessean joining us. I was breaking down the Tennessee Titans schedule and just happened to catch this little tidbit. When I look at the fact that five of their first six opponents had losing records last year, seven of their first nine opponents with losing records in 2018. So if you're a fan of the Titans, I mean, what's acceptable? You know, for me, it's, you know, either winning the division, which I don't think they'll do, or at least being a wild card team, which I think they're very capable of pulling that one off. So if I tell you right now for the Titans that they are in the playoffs, they have to go on the road, but at least they're in the playoffs in 2019. Is that acceptable? Is that meeting expectations, especially for a team that didn't make the playoffs last year?
I think, you know, if you wild card, start on the road, one and done, I don't think that's media expectations, especially when you talk about the expectations you set in two ways. One, firing Mike Mularkey after a playoff win, saying that's not good enough, and that's what you're saying. So, you know, a lot of reasons that year one under Mike Vrabel could only match the record and then could not get to the postseason. A lot of things to like about that year, too. But, you know, I think in this second year, you expect to start taking that step forward. And then, of course, just everyone talking good to great. That's not great. You know, talking good to great. Good to great is to me, it's getting at least double figures wins and at least a win in the postseason. That's pushing toward it, you know, giving yourself a chance to be it. So I think that's definitely a very hazy kind of middle ground. It's like, man, making the playoffs is what it's all about in this league. You make it, you're in the tournament, see what you can do. But, you know, I think that they're internally, they really believe that they have the goods to do more than that. And obviously so much of that revolves around the quarterback, but also on some young pass rushers coming of age, on that receiving core, taking a big step forward with new acquisitions and, you know, other, you know, especially Corey Davis taking another step, Delanie Walker returning now, retooling the offensive line. And, you know, I mean, I think the defense has a chance to be special. Again, the edge rushing is the thing, but everywhere else, and with Dean Pease and I think some of his leaders, I think there is supreme confidence on that side of the ball.
I guess the only problem I have with that, there's two things. First of all, are they better than the Colts? And I don't think they're there yet. The other part about Mike Mularkey, yes, you know, the fact that they at least made the playoffs in his final year, I will argue the fact that in 2016 and 2017, the Tennessee Titans blew it by not winning the division because they had control of it in both of those years. And you go back to 2016, going into that Christmas Eve game on the road against a very bad Jacksonville team in control of their own destiny, and they blew that game. And remember, they ended up with the same record as the Texans last year in 2016. But because of tiebreakers, it was the Titans, you know, having to watch from home. And then in 2017, remember, they were 8-4 in control of the AFC South, and they lost to mediocre teams like Arizona and San Francisco that year. Yeah, they still made the playoffs, but the reason why the disappointment was there is the fact they should have been hosting playoff games in both of those years.
Oh, no question, no doubt. And yeah, and then so there's plenty of valid criticisms of Mularkey, and, you know, I understand that. And you know, I think that obviously they were thinking strongly along those lines and probably didn't anticipate the playoff win in Kansas City, which essentially just prolonged his stay. So you're right. And last year, tons of injuries, obviously. A really strong finish, kind of finding Derrick Henry, you know, getting in position. And who knows if Marcus Mariota is able to go at the end instead of Blaine Gabbert. Maybe they beat the Colts and they finally beat Andrew Luck and they, you know, win the division. So, there's a lot of things. If you look deeply at Vrabel's first year, mostly, I think, positives. I mean, I think also he made some aggressive calls that didn't work out that you could argue, you know, maybe he should have reconsidered. But, you know, I think there's a lot of reason to like what he did. And then we'll see with some things. I mean, Arthur Smith as OC. I know there's some people who are just like, LaFleur, just terrible, and get out of here and bring the new guy. But, you know, you're still talking about a guy who's never called plays before. He just got elevated from tight ends coach. I mean, I think he's a very respected coach. And I think the players like him a lot. And there's a lot to like about him as a coach in the field. But you just don't know about play callers until they actually do it. So, a lot to find out. Because the offense, of course, Johnny, is absolutely the variable here for the Titans.
By the way, what's going to be your number one storyline that you're going to follow over the 4 days of the SEC Media Days next week?
Bob Holt's questions. Maybe I'll just count them all up and, you know, like rank his questions, best to worst. I think there's the ongoing. I mean, look, as far as from a team perspective, you know, of course, I'm interested in the Tennessee and Vanderbilt angles in particular. So those days, which would be Tuesday for Tennessee, Thursday for Vanderbilt, I mean, those are the days of interest for me. You know, I mean, I think beyond that and some individual things, I think it's still this ongoing, you know, story about name, image, likeness And we're seeing a court case play out in California in which college athletes in California may be able to profit from the name, image, and likeness. And NCAA is essentially, threatening the state, don't do it. Basically Mark Emmert saying, you may not have championships and they may not be eligible for bowls and whatever else if you pass this law. But we're coming to the head here with this whole thing. And I think even the people in power who have been trying so hard to prevent this from happening have to realize that, you just can't keep doing this when we have Dabo Swinney signing a $92 million deal to coach football. Room, tuition, and books, it's just we are past that, and it should be a free market in this country for everyone. So that is the ongoing thing, and I'm certain it'll come up when Greg Sankey talks, and we'll see. I think you're not going to hear a lot, unfortunately. That's the problem with media days. It's hard to get a lot of frank talk in these 4 days.